After the attempt on his life, Matt slept lightly that night. His instincts remained on alert to warn him of anything that wasn't the way it was supposed to be. He wished he had his guns, but Caballo Rojo had ordered something done with them. The only weapon he had was a fist-sized rock he had managed to sneak into the Hogan. The result of all that was that Matt was still tired when he rolled out of his blankets the next morning, but nothing else had happened. Well, one other thing. Juan Pablo was back. The Navajo was as stone-faced and unfriendly-looking as ever. Matt hadn't heard Juan Pablo come into the Hogan, and he felt a slight prickling of his nerves. He should have been aware of the man's arrival. Juan Pablo was standing up, though, so it was possible that he had just stepped into the Hogan. His wife knelt by the fire, preparing breakfast. If there was going to be any sort of reunion between them, obviously they intended to wait until they were alone for it, which was just fine with Matt. He got to his feet.
Good morning. Is Sam back too?
The half-breed followed the trail of the men he sought toward the settlement of Flat Rock 2 days ago. I have not seen him since.
Where have you been all that time since?
Juan Pablo frowned, as if tempted to tell Matt that was none of his business.
It took a day to return from the spot where I left your friend. The other day I spent cleansing myself of his presence.
Oh, now you've dirtied yourself up again by coming back here where I am.
You said that, white man, not I.
Well, I'm not going to be here much longer. I'm leaving today.
And so was Elizabeth, but he didn't mention that just yet.
Fine.
Aren't you going to ask me if I'm in good enough shape to travel?
Juan Pablo's silence was an eloquent indication of how little he cared about the answer to that question. Matt turned to the man's wife.
Thank you.
He had exchanged very few words with her, and neither of them had understood what the other was saying. But despite her sometimes disapproving demeanor, she had taken good care of him, and he appreciated that. He smiled at her and nodded, hoping that she understood he was grateful to her, and then he stepped out of the Hogan. The air had that welcome coolness desert air always did early in the morning.
Matt!
He turned around and felt even better. Elizabeth was coming toward him, beautiful in her dark green long-sleeved blouse and long skirt.
You're all right.
Did you expect something different?
After what happened yesterday, I didn't know what to expect. Do you still want to leave today?
That's right. There's still something bad brewing here. I don't know what it is, and I wish I did, but my guts tell me we'll be better off getting out while we can. You're still coming with me, aren't you?
I don't know. I hate to leave these people. I'd like to think I've done them some good, that they're going to be able to make their way better in the white man's world because of me.
She just didn't understand. The Navajo didn't want to make their way in the white man's world. They wanted to be left alone to live in their own world, in their own way. Matt wasn't going to say that to Elizabeth. For one thing, it wouldn't do any good. He couldn't change her beliefs any more than she could change those of the Navajo. But he could get her out of what might well turn out to be a dangerous situation.
I really think you ought to come with me. I mean, since I've been wounded and all.
He felt a bit ashamed of himself for playing that card. Somebody like Elizabeth couldn't resist the urge to help somebody. But if it got her clear of this canyon, he was willing to do it. Anyway, he was wounded. And while he felt stronger today than he had since winding up here, he still thought it would be a good idea to have somebody around to look after him if need be.
All right. I'll come with you. Anyway, there's nothing stopping me from coming back here later on, is there?
Not a thing.
They could deal with what would happen later once they were out of here.
Of course, we don't know if Caballo Rojo will allow us to leave.
So let's go talk to him.
Caballo Rojo was sitting outside his Hogan, working with a bit of silver, fashioning it into some small piece of jewelry. He looked up for a second as Matt and Elizabeth approached, but otherwise he didn't acknowledge that they were there.
Caballo Rojo, I'd like to talk to you. I know you understand me, even without Juan Pablo here to translate for me. I want to thank you for your hospitality, for seeing that I was taken care of while I was recovering from my injuries.
Caballo Rojo still didn't look up again.
Now that my wounds are healing, I think it's time for me to leave. I'd like to have my horse, my guns, and the rest of my gear returned to me.
There was still no response. Matt and Elizabeth traded worried glances.
Miss Fleming is going to go with me to help me in case my injuries trouble me.
Caballo Rojo finally lifted his head.
No!
Do you mean You don't want me to go with Mr. Bodine, Caballo Rojo?
Caballo Rojo means that neither of you will leave this canyon.
Matt turned sharply and saw Juan Pablo standing there. The Navajo had one of the single-shot rifles in his hands, and the weapon was trained on Matt's belly. Behind Juan Pablo stood three more men, one of them armed with another rifle, the other two with bows and arrows. Juan Pablo smiled, the first smile Matt had seen on the Navajo's face. It wasn't a comforting expression.
What's going on here? Caballo Rojo.
I have already spoken to Caballo Rojo. I have told him how you plan to go to the settlement and lead the white men back here so they can attack us and wipe out all of our people.
That's not true! Caballo Rojo, you must believe me. I've never done anything except try to help your people. And Mr. Bodine would never betray you after you helped him the way you did.
Lies. All lies. Like all the other whites, you seek only the destruction of the Diné. But your treachery will bring about only your own destruction.
He lifted the rifle.
No, you will never leave this canyon alive.
The trail of the rustled cattle continued to angle toward the canyon where the members of Caballo Rojo's clan made their home. Sam grew more worried as he saw that. Was it possible that the Navajo really were to blame for stealing that stock and killing Boyd's punchers? Sam didn't want to believe that was true. He couldn't deny the evidence of his own eyes, especially when the line of cliffs where the canyon was located came into view. As he and the other riders came closer, however, the tracks began to turn more to the north. Relief went through Sam as he realized that the trail was going to lead past the entrance to the Navajo Canyon. As the cliffs fell behind them, that relief turned to worry about Matt. He wasn't sure why that had started nagging at him, but the bond that existed between the Blood Brothers sometimes enabled them to sense when the other one was in trouble. Sam hoped that wasn't the case now.
That looks like hellacious country ahead of us. I don't reckon I've ever been up this far before. Can't be far to the Sweetwater Hills.
Boyd pointed to a range of low but rugged peaks with sides deeply seamed by canyons and crevices.
That must be them.
Boss, I've heard that those hills are haunted.
Huh. Ghosts didn't steal those cattle or ventilate those two boys, Pete. If they're in those hills, the varmints who took them there are flesh and blood, and bullets will put holes in them. We're not turning back now.
Never said anything about turning back. Just telling you what I heard, that's all.
The trail grew dim, and once again, Sam and Stovepipe had to search for it.
Found them.
There was no doubt now that they were headed straight for the Sweetwater Hills.
Looks like there's a heap of places to hide in those Badlands.
Then it's a good thing we've got you with us. Since you're one of the gang, you can tell us how to find the rest of your bunch.
I thought it was the Navajo who were responsible for what happened. Now you're saying it's a gang of white outlaws. Sort of changing your tune, ain't you, Lowry?
Oh, give me 5 minutes with a bowie knife and I get the truth out of you, you short-growed little runt.
Blast it, I'm not that short. It just looks like it because I hang around with this beanpole here.
Beanpole, huh? I ain't sure I like that name. I was just getting used to Stovepipe.
Pipe down, all three of you. Two wolves. What do you think?
Your cattle are probably stashed in some canyon up there in the hills, all right. And they won't be easy to find.
You don't know anything about it?
I'm just following a trail like you.
I got a hunch you're telling the truth. Pete, give them back their guns.
Boss, that's a mistake.
If it is, it's my mistake to make. I still give the orders in this bunch.
I never said you didn't, John Henry.
With obvious reluctance, Lowry turned in the saddle and motioned to his men.
All right, boys. Give them back their guns.
Sam felt a little better once the familiar weight of the Colt was back in its holster, the Winchester was in the saddle booth under his left thigh, and his bowie knife was nestled in its sheath on his left hip. He knew the situation was still full of risk, but at least now he could fight if he had to.
Let's go. But just in case you're trying to double-cross us, we'll still be keeping a close eye on you and your friends, two wolves.
No double-cross. We're on the same side.
That's true. It's the first time I've ever been on the same side as a damn redskin.
There's the first time for everything.
Several rugged mesas loomed between the riders and the hills. They would have to weave among those mesas to reach their destination, unless they went around and risked losing the trail, because it appeared that the stolen herd had been driven through those big flat-top formations. Sam cast occasional glances toward the tops of the mesas as the group started into the forest of rock. This would be a good spot for an ambush. Riflemen hidden atop one of those mesas would have a fine vantage point. But the sides of most of the formations appear to be sheer. Men might be able to climb some of them, but it would be difficult. Knowing that didn't stop Sam from worrying. He had survived more than one bushwhack attempt already in the past 8 or 9 days. It might be pushing his luck to live through another.
Where in blazes did the tracks go?
Sam studied the ground, then looked over at Stovepipe, who nodded.
They're gone, all right. Maybe we can pick them up on the other side of these mesas.
Well, let's have a look. Those cows had to go somewhere.
But when they emerged from the cluster of rock formations, half an hour of searching turned up no sign that the cattle had come this way, even to the keen eyes of Sam and Stovepipe.
That's just loco. They went in there. They had to come out somewhere.
Maybe they doubled back and come out on the same side they went in. Might be a good idea if we was to split up, Mr. Boyd, and make a circle around the whole place.
Don't let them talk you into that, John Henry. If they split us up, it'll be easier for somebody to jump us.
All that mistrust is getting a mite annoying.
I'm not splitting my men, but we'll circle around these mesas like you said, Stuart. That sounds like a good idea to me. Your friend's right about one thing. Those cows have to be somewhere.
With Sam and Stovepipe leading the way, watched hawkishly by Lowry, the group started around the area dotted with mesas. It was pretty extensive, so circling it took more than an hour. They found the place where they had followed the tracks among the mesas, but that was all. By the time they got back to where they had started on the far side, Sam had to admit that something odd had happened. The rustled cattle had gone in there, but they hadn't come out.
There's only one answer.
Yep, I agree.
What are you talking about?
Stovepipe pointed at the sky with a thumb.
What the hell? You're saying those cows sprouted wings and flew away? Because that makes as much sense as thinking they climb one of these mesas.
We just need to look harder. We missed something.
Sam's eyes searched the terrain thoughtfully. The tops of some of the mesas were probably a square mile in area, maybe even a little more than that. There might be enough grass growing on one of those to support a small herd of 50 head, plus the horses of the rustlers who had stolen them. If he was right about the motive behind the rustling, that it was intended solely to stir up Boyd and the other ranchers in the area to the point where they would support a war against the Navajo, then the thieves wouldn't care about the money they could make from selling the cows. They could let the stock starve on top of a mesa and still come out ahead. That still left the question of how the rustlers could have gotten the cattle up there, but Sam figured if they found the right mesa, they would also find the answer. For now, all they could do was look, and that depended on John Henry Boyd.
Now, let's take a closer look at all these mesas. And get your rifles out. I've got a bad feeling crawling around in my guts.
Sam had the same feeling. The men rode around the base of each mesa as they came to it, looking for some sort of hidden trail. In some places, it was hard to get close because over the centuries, huge slabs of rock had broken loose from the sides of the mesas and fallen around them. Sam thought about it. It was possible some of those slabs might conceal the start of a trail. It wouldn't have to be very wide. With only 50 cows to hide, the animals could be driven up single file if need be. The sun blasted down, making the air so hot and dry it seemed to sear the lungs if a man took a deep breath. As the search continued, the sweating men became more impatient and frustrated.
This is crazy. There ain't any cows on top of these mesas, John Henry. It just ain't possible.
Then we gotta admit them critters vanished into thin air. And I'm having a hard time believing that.
So am I. We'll keep looking.
It's already so late, we won't be able to make it back to the ranch today.
The boys we left there will be able to look after things. I want those cattle. More than that, I want whoever shot two of my punchers. They're not going to get away with that, by God.
Sam gazed toward one of the largest mesas, which sat about 300 yards away. It rose some 80 feet to its table-like top. Slabs of red stone littered the ground around its base, and lightning-like cracks in the rock zigzagged their way up the walls and places. Sam frowned. There was something about the mesa.
That's it.
Stovepipe brought his horse alongside Sam's mount.
What did you find, son?
Look at those cracks, Stovepipe. On some of them, the slope is gentle enough a cow could make it up them.
Yeah, if But most places they ain't. I'm looking, but I don't see one anybody could climb that goes all the way to the top.
But look at the line connecting one crack to the next one.
What line? I don't see any... Son of a gun. Is that a ledge?
I think so. It's narrow enough that it's hard to see, but it runs almost level over to another crack.
Yeah, and there's another one a mite higher, leading to the next crack after that. They're like stepping stones, with little ramps in between. You don't notice the ledges because your eyes are following the cracks.
That's the way it looks to me. The cracks are more pronounced, so you can see them better.
That ain't no natural formation. The cracks may be, but the ledges connecting them ain't. They must go all the way around the mesa.
The Navajo probably carved them. No telling how long ago. They could put lookouts up there to watch for their enemies. And they could fire arrows down or throw rocks off to ambush those enemies.
You reckon those ledges are wide enough for cows or a man on horseback?
Only one way to find out.
Sam lifted his reins.
Well, hold on there, Breed. Where do you think you're going?
I have an idea where the men we're looking for might be. But they're probably watching us right now. And I don't want them to realize that I've figured out their secret.
I don't believe you. I still think this is some sort of trick.
Boyd rode over.
What's going on here?
The Breed says he's figured it out. I think he's just trying to get away from us, though, so his friends can open fire on us.
That's not true. Look at this big mesa in front of me, Mr. Boyd. I think I see a trail leading up to the top.
Where? I don't see any trail. Just a bunch of cracks, like the whole thing's about to come tumbling down in an avalanche.
I'll bet it's a lot more stable than it looks. I want to amble over there and take a closer look. But if the rustlers are up there, I don't want them to realize that I know they're there.
Well, that makes sense, I reckon. Now go ahead, two wolves. But Stuart and Coleman stay here. And if any lead starts to fly, they'll die before we do. You got my word on that.
Sam hesitated.
Go ahead, son. We'll take that chance, won't we, Wilbur?
Do we have any choice?
Not a dang one.
Keep an eye on the top of the mesa, Mr. Boyd. If I was trying to set up an ambush, I wouldn't tell you where it was coming from now, would I?
Likely not.
Sam started his horse toward the mesa, moving at a deliberate pace. Several of the Devil's pitchfork hands were still searching around the other mesas, so what he was doing didn't look too suspicious, he hoped, because he could feel eyes on him. The same instincts that had warned him of danger many times in his adventurous life were setting off alarm bells inside him now. That warning was justified, too, as he discovered when he was still 100 yards from the base of the mesa. The hot breath of the slug was much too close for comfort.
Yeah!
Sam kicked his horse into a gallop. Dirt and rocks spouted from the ground as bullets struck around him. The closest cover was at the base of the mesa itself. The riflemen on top of the formation would have trouble firing straight down at him. The big slabs of fallen rock would give him some protection as well. As he raced toward the mesa, Sam glanced over his shoulder at his companions. All the other men were scattering as bullets whined among them, too. The riders hunted cover as fast as they could. One man wasn't fast enough. As Sam reached the rocks at the base of the mesa, he yanked his rifle from its sheath and swung down from the saddle. He dropped the reins and hoped that the horse wouldn't run off too far. Sam fired as fast as he could toward the top of the mesa. He had seen spurts of gun smoke from up there and had a general idea where the ambushers were. He didn't expect to hit any of them, but with luck, he could force them back for a second, which would give Stovepipe and the others more time to find shelter. As the slugs began to search for him, Sam ducked behind a chunk of sandstone that was taller than he was. Sam slid along the rock, reached the corner of it, and fired at the mesa's rim, working the rifle's lever swiftly between rounds. Then he sprinted toward another rock that brought him closer to one of the cracks in the mesa wall. When he reached cover again, he looked out over the flats in front of the mesa. The rest of the men who had come here with him were out of sight now, hidden behind boulders and some of the smaller rock. Sam heard them return the fire of the rustlers on top of the mesa. While his companions were keeping the rustlers busy, Sam worked his way closer. When he reached one of the cracks, he saw that it ran deep enough into the rock to form a ledge angling upward. The ledge was wide enough for a couple of cows to ascend it. Driving cattle up to the top of the mesa by this route would be difficult, and once the beasts were up there, getting them down would be even harder. But maybe the rustlers didn't intend to bring them down. As he had reasoned out earlier, selling the stolen stock had never been the goal.
Sam started up the crack in the rock. For several yards, the climb was an easy one. When it grew steeper, he came to one of the connecting man-made ledges that were hard to see from a distance. Up close like this, it was obvious that the path had been hewn out of the stone by hand. All the sharp edges had been rounded away by erosion, though, which indicated that long years, maybe even centuries, had passed since the work had been done. Sam had heard legends about old ones, people who had been in this part of the world even before the Navajo, and he wondered if this path were some of their handiwork. Those old ones had disappeared mysteriously sometime in the dim past, so if they had turned this mesa into a watchtower, obviously that hadn't been enough to save them in the end. Sam snapped out of his momentary reverie. The past might be fascinating, but the present was dangerous and needed his full attention. He walked out onto the ledge, keeping an eye on the rim some 70 feet above him. After about 50 feet, he came to another of the zigzagging cracks and was able to climb it to the next man-made ledge. As he moved higher and higher, his route carried him around the curve of the mesa, so he couldn't see his companions anymore. Sam didn't know how many men he would find on top of the mesa. It would have taken at least 5 or 6 to steal that herd and drive them out here. Once the cattle were hidden atop the mesa, fewer men would be needed to keep an eye on them. Some of the rustlers could have headed to town, leaving only a couple up there. It had sounded like more than 2 rifles firing at him, however, and Sam figured there were at least 4 men he would have to deal with when he reached the top. Those weren't good odds. It would have felt a lot better if Matt had been here with him, but now that he had started up, there wasn't much he could do except keep going. If he was able to come in behind the rustlers and get the drop on them, he could force them to surrender. A sound somewhere above him made him jerk his head up. A boulder almost as big as he was plummeting toward him. He threw himself into a dive that carried him out of the boulder's path. It slammed into the ledge a few feet behind him. His momentum sent him sliding toward the brink of the curving ledge. He had to drop his rifle to slap both hands against the sandstone and stop himself. Luckily, the Winchester didn't bounce off. The boulder rebounded from the ledge and fell the rest of the way to the ground, where it landed with a cloud of dust. Sam grabbed the rifle and scrambled to his feet. Obviously, the rustlers knew he was trying to climb the mesa, so he wouldn't be taking them by surprise after all. And if they could try to drop one boulder on him, probably they could make another attempt. He ran along the ledge toward the next crack in the rock. The mesa wall bulged out above it, so that would give him some protection. His heart pounded as he climbed several feet up the sloping crack. He was safe here, but whether he retreated or forged ahead, as soon as he stepped out onto another of those open ledges, he risked having a boulder dropped on his head. But he couldn't stay here forever. Boyd and his men might be able to lay siege to the mesa and starve out the rustlers, but they would be starving out Sam at the same time. He looked up. The crack in which he had taken shelter became too steep after another 10 feet for cattle and horses to use it as a trail, but a man could climb it. A grim smile tugged at his mouth. It wouldn't be easy. In some places, the crack was almost vertical, but it could be done. And most importantly, the rustlers couldn't get at him with either boulders or bullets while he was making the ascent. He would need both hands, though, so he took off his belt and used it to rig a sling for the Winchester. When he had the rifle hung over his shoulder, he hurried along the slope until it turned upward at a steeper angle. Ignoring the ledge that had been cut into the rock, he started up the natural crack, crawling now because of the angle. From somewhere above him, Sam heard voices.
Can you see him?
No, blast it! He found himself a hole somewhere.
Well, let him stay there. Let him stay there and rot.
Sam smiled again. He continued climbing. The crack narrowed, grew steeper still, turned into a chimney. Sam pulled the Winchester around so that it hung in front of him, pressed his back against one side of the opening and his feet against the other, and worked his way up, inch by inch. After a while, the strain set his muscles to trembling slightly. There was nowhere for him to go except up, so he kept struggling to lift himself again and again. He ignored the pain and continued climbing. The shots would taper off, then flare up again. From down below, it would be very difficult for any of the men on the ground to get a clear shot at the rustlers on the mesa. At the very least, that kept the rustlers occupied, though, and gave Sam the chance he needed to make his way to the top. A few minutes later, he saw the end of the crack not far above him. His first impulse was to climb out right away, but he stopped where he was instead and listened intently. He heard the shots coming from the other side of the mesa, but he heard something closer as well. He'd suspected that the rustlers might leave a man over here on guard, in the area where they had seen Sam last. If he just poked his head up without being careful about it, he would probably get a bullet through the brain. Sam looked around and found a fist-sized chunk of sandstone. The guard was to his right, so he drew back his arm as much as he could in the narrow confines of the crack and threw the rock in that direction. It sailed up and out, and Sam followed the rock, moving fast. As he emerged from the crack with a Winchester cradled in both hands, he threw himself forward on his belly. About 20 feet away, a man in range clothes was turning toward him. The rock had done its job, causing the guard to take his attention off the crack for a second. The rustler hurried a shot at Sam, the bullet hitting the ground well to Sam's left. Sam fired more deliberately, and his aim was true. The man dropped his gun and staggered to the side, and that took him too close to the edge. Sam scrambled to his feet and ran toward the other side of the mesa. As he had suspected, the mesa had some grass growing on its top, and even a few small bushes. Off to Sam's right was a basin where the top of the mesa had sunk, creating a rock-lined pool that held water from the occasional rains. Gathered around that pool were the cattle that had been stolen from John Henry Boyd's ranch. They didn't need to be fenced in. They wouldn't get far from the water. And anyway, where would they go? Beyond the pool was a rope corral made from a couple of lassos and some stakes pounded into the hard ground. Four horses were inside the corral. Since Sam had already killed one man, that meant there were three more rustlers up here. He got instant confirmation of that a second later, when three men emerged from behind the horses. Sam was outnumbered, and the scrubby vegetation atop the mesa offered no protection. So he angled toward the only cover he could find, the cattle clustered around the pool. He returned fire as he ran, working the Winchester's lever and snapping shots toward the rustlers. One of the cows was struck by a stray slug. Sam ducked between two of the beasts.
Where the hell did he go?
He's in amongst the cattle. Spread out. We'll circle him.
Sam couldn't afford to let that happen. He yanked his hat off his head and slashed right and left with it, swatting the rumps of several cows. At the same time, he fired his Winchester one-handed into the air. The cattle reacted as he hoped they would. The herd surged away from the pool in a full-on stampede, straight at the rustlers.
Watch out!
Sam had his own scrambling to do, since he was in the midst of the cattle when they began to run. He leapt from side to side to avoid the lumbering beasts, but he was still pummeled. If he fell, he would never get up again. Sam knew that. He dropped his rifle, willing to lose the Winchester if it would save his life, and used both hands to grab the horns of a steer charging past him. The steel spring muscles in his legs vaulted him onto the animal's back. Sam hung on for dear life. With his legs clamped around the steer's neck, Sam used his grip on the horns to twist the beast's head. That forced it toward the edge of the stampeding herd. He lost track of the three rustlers, but he had more pressing worries at the moment. The steer began to buck. Sam had heard that down in Texas, cowboys had started to have what they called rodeos, competitions that centered around ranch work. One of the events was bull riding, or so he'd been told. This was a steer, not a bull, but the ride was a thrilling and dangerous one anyway. Sam thought a couple of times that the steer was going to throw him off, but he managed to stay on until the animal reached the edge of the herd. He let go of the horns and piled off, leaping desperately to put as much distance between himself and the stampede as possible. When he hit the ground, he rolled away fast and came up running. Dust choked him, but at least none of the cattle ran over him. When he looked back, he saw that he was clear. Now he could start looking for the rustlers again, as he blinked grit out of his eyes and drew the Colt that had stayed thonged down in its holster. The thing about a stampede on top of a mesa was that the cattle didn't have very far they could go. When the leaders reached the edge, they began to turn, and the herd started to mill. Sam ran around the confusion, searching for the three men. The first one he found wouldn't ever steal any more cows. The man had not been able to get out of the way, and the thundering hooves had pounded him into a gory mess that barely resembled anything human. The second man had been more fortunate, but not much. Both of his legs were broken. But just like a broken-backed rattlesnake can still bite, this crippled rustler was dangerous. When he spotted Sam, he heaved himself up with one hand and lifted a revolver with the other. Sam didn't have time for anything fancy. The rustler's head snapped back as a red-rimmed hole appeared in his forehead. Sam wanted to take at least one of the men alive so they could question him. Now that might not be possible. He swung around looking for the third man, and as he did, the last rustler slammed into him from behind. Sam went down with a man on his back. The rustler must have lost his gun in the chaos of the stampede, otherwise he would have just shot Sam. Instead, he looped an arm around Sam's throat from behind and started trying to choke the life out of him. Sam tried to buck the rustler off, just as the steer had bucked under him. The rustler clung with the same tenacity Sam had, though.
I'm gonna kill you, Redskin!
Sam's vision was beginning to blur as a red haze dropped over his eyes. He had no choice. He pushed the Colt's barrel against the man's leg. Sam arched his back, throwing the man to the side. He rolled away and came up in a crouch, holding the Colt ready to fire again if he needed to. But all the fight had already gone out of the rustler, along with a great deal of blood. He pawed at the wound in his thigh, but the blood just ran between his fingers like a river. Sam knew that his bullet had torn an artery. He had intended just to inflict a flesh wound, something to make the man let go, but now he saw that the rustler had only moments to live, unless that bleeding could be stopped. Sam slammed the Colt against the rustler's head, knocking the man out. There was no time to waste in struggling with him. Sam dropped the gun and pulled the man's belt off, then wrapped it around the thigh as high as he could above the wound, and pulled it tight. Slipping the Colt's barrel into a loop he fashioned in the belt, he began twisting it. As the belt tightened and cut into the flesh of the man's leg, the gush of blood slowed. Sam used both hands to twist the Colt and draw the makeshift tourniquet even tighter. The blood flow stopped.
No! Blast it!
But the man's eyes were open and staring, and the muscles of his face went slack. The fourth and final rustler on top of this mesa was dead.
Sam!
Sam turned his head to look and saw Stovepipe Stewart running toward him, followed by Wilbur Coleman and John Henry Boyd.
Sam, you all right? Lord, that's a lot of blood.
It's all his.
Sam released the tourniquet and pulled his gun loose from the dead man's belt.
I was trying to wing him, but I nicked an artery instead.
I'll say you did. Looks like he bled practically a whole lake.
Weariness gripped Sam as he got to his feet.
What about the rest of you? Was anybody hurt?
One of my riders, Ben Conroy, was killed. A couple men got creased, but that's all. Any more of the varmints up here?
None breathing. There were four men with the cattle.
Oh, this is just about the craziest thing I ever saw. Who'd be loco enough to drive cattle up a narrow little trail like that to the top of a mesa?
Somebody who knew the chances of you finding them would be mighty small. If it wasn't for Sam's eyes, likely we never would have spotted the way up here.
I reckon this proves you didn't have anything to do with that stock being stolen, Two Wolves. You wouldn't have done what you did if you were part of this bunch.
If you check the bodies, you'll see that they're all white, not Navajo.
Yeah, I reckon I was wrong about that, too.
You ever seen this fella before, Mr. Boyd?
I don't think I have.
I have. I don't know who he is, but I remember seeing him in Flat Rock during the past week or so.
Uh-huh. I was just thinking the same thing, Pard. Let's have a look at the others.
You won't be able to tell much about one of them. He got caught in the stampede.
Yeah, gotta pick him up with a shovel, huh? Well, we'll let that one go.
Stovepipe hunkered on his heels next to the man Sam had shot in the head.
This one, though. I've seen him in town, too. Don't you think, Wilbur?
Yeah, he looks familiar.
So the gang's holed up in Flat Rock. We'll go in there and clean out the whole place if we have to.
That won't do any good. You don't know who else is part of the bunch. What we need to do is figure out a way to draw them into the open.
Maybe. I know my boys, though, and they're gonna want to go in shooting.
You'll have to keep them from doing that.
Sam turned toward the rope corral, which had survived the stampede intact as the cows went around it.
I want to take a look at their horses. Maybe that'll tell us something.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Together, they examined the rustler's mounts. The brands were ones that Sam didn't recognize, and neither did Boyd.
Well, that just means they didn't come from any of the spreads around here. I figured as much.
All four horses were unsaddled. Sam ran his hands over the flanks of a leggy roan.
This one is hotter than the others. He's been run hard fairly recently.
You reckon one of those fellas made a fast trip out here?
That would mean the rustlers left three men to keep an eye on the cattle. That sounds reasonable.
Then why'd the fourth man come out here all hell for leather?
To warn the other hombres that we were trying to trail the stolen herd. That the way it lays out to you, Sam?
Yeah. The men who tried to bushwhack me this morning hurried back to Flat Rock to tell their boss that I wasn't dead. They must have seen the two of you join up with me. And then Mr. Boyd and his men came along and we all started trailing the cattle. The boss sent word to his men out here, hoping they'd get rid of us.
They jumped the gun a mite.
Yeah, one of them has a habit of doing that.
Sam thought it was very likely that the man who had taken that first shot at him and Matt was dead now. One of the four men who had been killed here, on top of the mesa.
Getting those cows down off this mesa is gonna be a chore. I'll be damned if I'll leave them up here, though. We'll wait until morning and see if we can drive them back down that trail.
That's up to you and your men. Now that you've decided that Stovepipe and Wilbur and I are trustworthy after all, there's something else we need to do.
What's that?
Sam thought about Matt. The canyon where Caballo Rojo's clan lived wasn't very far away. They might not be able to reach it by nightfall, but he thought he could find it even after darkness had fallen.
Let's just say I want to go visit a sick friend.
This had been one of the longest days of Matt Bodine's life. He knew it had been hard on Elizabeth, too, but at least she had been in the shade part of the time. He had been baking in the blistering sun all day, tied to a stake. Standing there like that for hours had caused the wounds in his side to ache like a bad tooth. But he could tell the bullet holes weren't bleeding again, just hurting. And that was something to be thankful for anyway. They hadn't really hurt Elizabeth either, just forced her to sit beside Juan Pablo's hogan and watch Matt's torment. That was the only other good thing about this ordeal. He looked over at her now and saw how her face was pale and drawn with a strain. He tried to summon up a smile to let her know that everything was all right, but he couldn't quite manage it. Things weren't all right, though, and they both knew it. Juan Pablo and his followers intended to kill both of them. It was just a matter of time. Juan Pablo had at least a dozen men backing his play. Matt didn't know if Caballo Rojo was one of them, or if the clan headman was just staying out of this for the time being because he didn't want Juan Pablo challenging him for leadership. But the Navajo had been drifting in from their homes along the creek all day, gathering here to look at the captive white man. And some of them seemed very happy about it. The men had taken turns standing guard over Matt, although with his hands tied behind his back and his torso lashed to the stake, he wasn't about to go anywhere. He supposed it made them feel like they were accomplishing something to stand there clutching their old rifles and glaring at him. Matt didn't look directly at them. He didn't want to give them the satisfaction of letting them see what bad shape he was really in. The sun had baked his brain until his vision was fuzzy, his thoughts were clouded, and despair gripped his heart. He felt like the heat had leached every bit of moisture out of his body. His tongue was swollen, and his mouth as dry as cotton. His head drooped forward, but he wouldn't allow himself to pass out. Even though he was helpless, he wanted to know what was going on around him. Because of that, he saw movement as someone approached him late that afternoon. The sun had started its slide toward the western horizon, which gave him a certain amount of blessed relief, although the canyon still felt like an oven. Through slitted eyes, Matt watched as Juan Pablo walked up to him.
Bodine, this day has taught you that the Navajo are still a proud people.
I never doubted that. But there's no pride in cruelty. You have nothing to be proud of, Juan Pablo.
The man's face darkened in anger. Elizabeth started to get to her feet, but Juan Pablo's wife, who stood near her, clamped a hand on her shoulder and forced her back down on the ground.
For too many years, my people have done what the white man told them to do. They have treated us like animals. They have told themselves they are being generous to us by allowing us to live on our own land, while at the same time they try to take more and more of that land away from the Diné. But soon they will all be gone. We will drive them out.
A couple dozen of you? How are you gonna do that? You won't stand a chance.
More men will come from all over this land you white men call the Four Corners. As if your states truly mean anything. They are false boundaries.
He swept an arm around him.
Everything, as far as a man can ride on a good pony, belongs to the Diné. And when the other clans hear that we are driving the whites from our midst, they will come to help us. The uprising will spread and soon will be complete. Then all those who are not Diné will either leave or die.
There was a slim chance Juan Pablo was right, at least partially. Matt had studied enough history to know that most revolutions started small. The ones that succeeded grew until they reached the point where they couldn't be stopped. But that wouldn't happen here. It couldn't. There weren't enough Navajo to stand up to the army. Even if Juan Pablo was able to get all the clans to rise in rebellion, the cavalry would come in and crush them. Many of the men would be slaughtered, and the rest would be rounded up and probably forced back to Bosque Redondo with their families. It would be a tragedy all the way around.
If you let us go, Miss Fleming and I will try to help your people. We'll tell everyone that the Navajo land should should be left to the Navajo.
You think those who have built the town of Flat Rock will abandon it? You think the white ranchers who have driven their cattle onto our land will take them away?
He was right about that. Once settlers had moved into an area, they hardly ever gave it up. The government would have to force them to do so. And Matt didn't figure there was much sentiment in Washington for something like that.
There's no reason you can't all learn to live together.
Foolishness. The rattlesnake and the scorpion are more trustworthy than the white man.
Matt was at the end of his rope. He just wished there was some way he could save Elizabeth. Maybe Caballo Rojo wouldn't allow Juan Pablo to kill her. The headman had let her stay here in the canyon and try to teach the children. He must have thought she was doing some good for his people. But as the sun dipped below the peaks to the west and a red glare filled the sky, Matt looked at Juan Pablo and saw the fanatical glare on the man's face. Caballo Rojo was no longer the most powerful man in this canyon. Juan Pablo was, and he would delight in exercising that power. Suddenly, one of the Navajo men came running toward them. Juan Pablo swung around sharply. The words flowed swiftly as the newcomer reported to Juan Pablo. Matt couldn't follow any of what was being said, but he didn't like the cruel smile on Juan Pablo's lips as the man turned back to him.
Your friend has returned. He approaches the canyon now with two more white men.
Matt's heart sank. Under any other circumstances, he would have been very happy to hear that Sam was back. Now, though, his blood brother was riding into a trap and didn't know it. If there were just some way to warn him. Matt didn't know if the sound would carry beyond the canyon walls, but he could try anyway. But before he could make a sound, Juan Pablo stepped forward and struck swiftly with the rifle he held. He rammed the butt into Matt's stomach. Then he brought the rifle up and crashed the stock against Matt's jaw. The brutal blow drove Matt's head back against the thick steak. The double impact sent red explosions cascading through his brain. When those explosions faded, nothing was left except an all-enveloping blackness. The sun was down by the time Sam, Stovepipe, and Wilbur reached the Navajo Canyon, but the western sky was still filled with a reddish-gold glow. During the ride down here from the mesa where the rustlers had been holed up, Sam and Stovepipe had discussed the situation and agreed that everything they had discovered so far supported the theory they had put together.
Big question is, who's behind it? Gotta be somebody in Flat Rock.
There's another big question. Where are those rifles?
Also in Flat Rock, or somewhere close by. That'd be my guess anyway. I don't reckon the boss would want him too far away from him until he's ready to try delivering him to the Navajo again.
I wonder how come he's waited this long.
I reckon that's because of our new pard here.
Me?
Yeah, you and your friend Bodine. You spooked the fellow who's in charge of this bunch. He wanted to make sure you weren't going to cause too much trouble before he tried delivering the guns again. That's why folks keep trying to shoot you. You know, you might as well have painted a big old target on your back, the way you rode into Flat Rock and started poking around.
Well, I was trying to stir up a hornet's nest. I guess I succeeded.
I'll say you did.
Sam pointed to the mouth of the canyon up ahead on their right.
That's where we're headed.
Those Indians aren't going to try to lift our hair, are they?
They were friendly enough when I left.
But Sam knew that was only partially true. Caballo Rojo had tolerated the presence of the Blood Brothers, and Juan Pablo had barely contained his hostility toward them, only because his clan headman had ordered it so. Sam had been gone for several days, and he knew that things could have changed during that time. But he hoped that he and his companions could ride into the canyon without putting their lives in too much danger. Anyway, Matt was there, so Sam didn't have much choice in the matter. They rode into the mouth of the canyon. Sam glanced up at the spots on the walls where sentries were usually posted. He didn't see anybody, but that didn't concern him greatly. The light was growing dimmer, and anyway, the Navajo were seen only when they wanted to be seen. Sam looked along the creek. The first of the Hogans wouldn't be visible until they were deeper in the canyon. He listened. Sam probably would have thought something was wrong if he hadn't heard the sheep somewhere up ahead, but at the same time, his nerves had grown taut. Something was wrong, he realized, although he didn't know what it was. Stovepipe must have shared some of the same instincts.
I'm starting to get a bad feeling about it.
Men suddenly rushed out of the brush on both sides of the riders. Sam attempted to recognize the Navajo clothing, then one of the men reached up in an attempt to grab him and haul him off his horse. Sam kicked the man in the chest and knocked him away.
Get out of the canyon! Back the way we...
Something crashed into the back of his left shoulder and made him slump forward over the neck of his horse. From the way his arm had gone numb, he figured that he'd been clouted by a club. The Navajo warriors swarmed around the three riders. Wilbur drew his gun, but a club knocked it out of his hand before he could fire. The men grabbed Stovepipe and dragged him off his horse. Sam found himself hauled to the ground as well. Heavily outnumbered as they were, Sam knew their chances of winning this fight were slim. He had no idea why Caballo Rojo's men were attacking them. That answer could wait for later. Right now, he just wanted to break free and get out of there. That wasn't fated to happen. Another club smashed into the back of his knees and made his legs collapse under him. The man pummeled and kicked him as he went to the ground. Sam couldn't see Stovepipe and Hoover anymore. He doubted if they were faring any better. Sam grabbed an attacker's leg and heaved, upending the man. That gave him a little breathing room. He launched a kick of his own and landed it solidly in another man's groin. As the Navajo warriors fell back for a second, Sam rolled onto hands and knees and started to lever himself to his feet. But a club struck him in the back of the head, sending him sprawling to the ground again. He felt consciousness slipping away from him and tried desperately to hang on to it. The last thing he was aware of before oblivion claimed him was the impact of moccasin-shod feet landing on his ribs. Red light flickered and glared against Matt's eyelids, gradually rousing him from the stupor that gripped him. He moved his head from side to side in an attempt to shake loose some of the cobwebs from his brain. That was a mistake. It made Matt feel like he was spinning crazily through a hellish void. When he forced his eyes open and saw flames leaping up in front of him, that only reinforced the feeling. But it was just a campfire, he realized after a moment. He sagged against the ropes, binding him to the post. His captors had built a fire that lit up the area in front of Juan Pablo's Hogan. And Matt was no longer the only prisoner. A few yards away, Sam Two Wolves sprawled motionless on the ground. For a terrible few seconds, Matt thought his blood brother was dead. Then he saw the slow rise and fall of Sam's chest. Matt's relief was tempered by concern, though, because Sam was unconscious and Matt couldn't tell what had happened to him. Sam might be badly wounded and dying, even as Matt stood there staring at him. Two men Matt had never seen before lay near Sam. Both were white and looked like cowboys. They appeared to be out cold, too. All three men had their hands tied behind their backs. Matt looked around for Elizabeth and didn't see her. She might be in Juan Pablo's Hogan. Juan Pablo wasn't visible either. Two of his followers stood nearby, holding rifles and scowling at Matt and the other prisoners. After a moment, Sam shook his head and blinked his eyes open. He winced at the garish light from the fire. Then he lifted his head a little and started to look around.
Over here, Sam.
Sam blinked again as he stared toward the post where Matt was tied.
Matt? Is that you?
Yeah, it's me. I'd come over there and let you loose, but...
You're not going to say that you're a little tied up at the moment, are you?
I was thinking about it, yeah.
Is that Juan Pablo's Hogan?
Yeah.
I take it this is his doing.
That's right. He plans to lead the clan in an uprising and try to get the other clans to join in. But they won't stand a chance.
They might, with nearly 500 new Springfields to lure the other clans into joining them.
500 Springfields? What are you talking about, Sam?
If Juan Pablo is the leader of this would-be rebellion, then he has some white allies. The gang that bushwhacked us in the first place stole a shipment of rifles bound for Fort Defiance. They were about to deliver them to the Navajo when you and I came along and fouled up the works.
You know this for a fact?
At the moment, I don't have any proof, but I'm reasonably sure that the theory is correct.
That's good enough for me. Who are those two Ranahans with you?
Before Sam could answer, a Navajo guard stepped closer and aimed a kick at Sam's head. Sam rolled out of the way and pulled his legs around in a sudden move, sweeping the Navajo's legs out from under him.
Maybe not the smartest thing you've ever done.
The guard scrambled back to his feet, with murder in his dark eyes. At that moment, Juan Pablo stepped out of the Hogan. The guard stopped in his tracks, and then moved back with obvious reluctance. Juan Pablo stood over Sam.
When the time comes for you to die, half-breed, I will kill you. You betray your blood by siding with the white men. You no longer deserve to live.
What about you? You're liable to get a bunch of your people killed if you go through with this plan.
And those who are left will mourn their deaths. But the people who live will be free. The white men will be gone.
It'll never happen, Juan Pablo. The government won't let it. They'll send in the army to wipe you out.
This is our land. We know how to fight here better than the white man's army.
Much as Matt hated to admit it, Juan Pablo had a point there. The Navajo knew this country, knew how to survive here, knew how to strike hard against the enemy and then hide. Normally a peaceful people, content to farm and hunt, to weave blankets and make jewelry, when aroused, they could be fierce, implacable foes. Kit Carson had learned that, back in the old days, but the army had almost limitless resources. The Navajo could fight a war and deal out plenty of damage, but in the end, they would lose.
What are you going to do with us?
You will all die, of course. When the sun comes up tomorrow morning, you will be killed. You will be the first to die from the weapons that will save our people.
What do you...
But Juan Pablo had turned and strode away, taking the guards with him and ignoring the prisoners now, as if they were no longer worthy of his notice.
The Springfields. Juan Pablo's going to get those army rifles tonight.
Yeah, that's the way it sounded to me, too. We've got to get loose and find a way to stop him. He's going to get a lot of people killed for no good reason.
That's Juan Pablo and some of his men going to take delivery on those rifles.
Yeah, and they'll bring him right back here so Juan Pablo can have his little firing squad in the morning.
One of the men who had been brought in with Sam began to stir. He lifted his shaggy head and shook it. After a moment, his bleary-eyed gaze landed on Sam.
Thought you said these Navajo were friends of yours, Sam.
I said they didn't kill us. And they let Matt stay here to recover from those bullet holes. That's a big difference from being our friends.
Oh, yeah, I reckon. You'd be Matt Bodine?
That's right. Who are you?
A fellow who wishes he'd gotten a mite more hospitable reception. Named Stovepipe Stewart.
And this other fellow is Wilbur Coleman. They're range detectives, Matt. They've been helping me track down the men who bushwhacked us and figure out what it's all about.
Stolen Springfield rifles, I bet.
You'd win that bet. How's Wilbur?
He's breathing, but he's still out. I guess they dragged the two of you out of your saddles and walloped you with clubs, too.
Yeah. Oh, from the way my old noggin feels, they got in some good licks, too. Oh. Well, you boys tell me what's going on, why don't you?
Juan Pablo intends to murder us at dawn.
By shooting us with those Springfields, which means he's going to get them tonight.
Dang it. I guess the big boss in Flat Rock decided he didn't need to wait no longer. Or maybe this here Juan Pablo fella sent word to him he's got all four of us hogtied, so he's anxious to get rid of us while he's got the chance. I wish we had old John Henry and the boys from the Devil's Pitchfork with us again right about now.
All right. One of you's gonna have to explain all that.
For the next 5 minutes, both Sam and Stovepipe filled Matt in on everything that had happened since the Blood Brothers split up, along with explaining the theory they had worked out about some gang trying to start an Indian war so they could take over after the army forced the Navajo out of the Four Corners.
That makes sense. Do you know who's behind it?
No clue.
We figure they're operating out of the settlement, but we don't even know that for sure.
Wilbur started to come around. Stovepipe scooted over closer to him.
Take it easy, Pard. You're all right. We're sort of between a rock and a hard place at the moment, but we'll get out of it.
Oh, speaking of rocks, I feel like an avalanche landed on top of me.
And I'm tied up, blast it.
We all are.
When we get loose, we're gonna have a heap of scorch settling to do, that's all I can say.
You're right about that, partner.
Stovepipe glanced toward Matt. A second later, Matt knew why. He heard the shuffle of soft footsteps behind him, and then he felt the touch of cold steel against his skin. Matt's breath froze in his throat for a second as he felt the knife press against his wrist. Then the blade moved, and the tug that came on one of the ropes binding him told him that the keen edge was sawing through it. The rope parted and fell away. Whoever was wielding the knife moved on to one of the others and started cutting through it. Matt's hands had gone numb from being tied so tightly. As the blood began to rush back into his fingers, he felt like they were being stabbed with thousands of tiny pins. Painful though it might be, it was a good feeling.
I don't know who's back there, but I'm sure obliged to you for turning me loose.
The last of the ropes came loose. After the ordeal of that long blistering day he had gone through, he almost fell without their support. He caught himself and half turned, reaching out to grab the stake to which he had been tied. Bracing himself with that grip, he looked into the stolid face of Juan Pablo's wife, the woman who had fed him and tended to his wounds. Maybe she would understand his gratitude if he expressed it in Spanish.
Gracias. Can you cut my friends loose too?
Matt, somebody's coming.
Matt straightened and grabbed the knife away from the woman. She let him take it, willingly.
Better get back in the Hogan. You don't want them knowing you helped us, whoever it is.
She might not have understood the words, but fear was universal. She turned and scurried into the earthen dwelling. There wasn't time to cut the others loose from their bonds before the Navajo men got there. So clutching the knife, Matt broke into a shambling run that carried him around the Hogan and out of the circle of light cast by the fire. He leaned against the Hogan to catch his breath. Even that momentary burst of action had winded him. As he stood there, he heard the returning guards, realizing he was gone. At any moment now, they would come searching for him. Matt drew himself deeper into the shadows behind the Hogan and waited. The two guards split up, which was a lucky break for Matt. As weak as he was, he couldn't have fought two men at once. He knew he'd be doing good to deal with one of the guards. His fingers tightened on the handle of the knife as one of the men came around the Hogan toward him. They probably thought he had fled, abandoning the others, and wouldn't expect to find him lurking so close by. Matt struck without warning as the guard stepped past him, bringing down the butt end of the knife's handle against the back of the Navajo's head. The blow drove the man to his knees. Matt kicked him in the back and sent him sprawling. Matt sprang forward and grabbed the man's fallen rifle. A shot might rouse others along the creek, so he used the stock to knock the guard out cold. Matt turned from the unconscious man, just in time to see the other guard charging at him from the shadows. He still had hold of the rifle, so he thrust it out in front of him like a spear. The Navajo's momentum carried him into the barrel, which dug deep into his belly and doubled him over. Matt stepped forward and brought his knee up, catching the man under the chin. The guard went down, just as unconscious as his companion. Matt fell against the Hogan. Battling the two men had taken every bit of his strength. But he had to summon up more from somewhere because Sam and the two range detectives were still prisoners. Matt pushed himself away from the Hogan and started around it at a shambling run. He merged into the firelight and was almost at the entrance when Elizabeth Fleming ran out of the Hogan and almost collided with him.
Oh, are you all right?
Yes, Josefina just untied me.
Matt had to think for a second to remember that Josefina was the name of Juan Pablo's wife. He had heard it used only occasionally.
Matt, what happened to those two guards?
They're both knocked out for now.
Better cut us loose while you got the chance.
Give me the knife. You look like you're about to fall down, Matt.
Yeah, I feel like it too. Oh.
He pressed the knife into her hands.
Be careful, but don't waste any time.
As Elizabeth took the knife and knelt beside Sam, Matt saw a movement from the corner of his eye and turned to look toward the Hogan's entrance. He saw Josefina emerging from the dwelling with her arms full of gun belts and holstered revolvers.
Son of a gun! My Colts! They were hidden in there the whole time!
The woman practically dumped the weapons into his hands. He staggered a little under their weight. When Matt turned toward the prisoners again, he saw that Elizabeth had succeeded in freeing Sam. His blood brother leapt to his feet and flexed his hands a few times to get the blood flowing in them again.
Give me my gun.
Sam took his gun belt and strapped it around his hips. Stovepipe was free by then, and he hurried over to retrieve his revolver as well, followed by Wilbur. Matt felt strength flow back into him as he buckled on the pair of Colts. It might not be real. The return of his guns had buoyed his spirits, and that could account for the fresh energy. But for now, he would take it.
I'm not sure what's going on here, but it sure does feel good to be free again.
You can thank Josefina for that. It was her idea to cut you loose and to untie me.
Why would she betray her husband like that?
Sam took the knife from Elizabeth and slid it into the sheath attached to his gun belt.
It was either that or cut my throat, and don't think she didn't consider doing that instead.
But why?
She freed us so you can take me out of the canyon and get me far away from Juan Pablo.
Oh.
What are you talking about? You mean... Oh, shoot.
Yes. He was going to take me as a second wife once his armed uprising succeeded. Josefina didn't want that, so she thought that if she turned you loose, you'd escape and take me with you.
Well, she was right about that. Where are our horses?
Elizabeth took hold of his arm.
Come on, I'll show you.
The group hurried along the creek for a quarter of a mile, then Elizabeth led them to a brush corral where a number of horses milled around. It was dark away from the fire in front of Juan Pablo's Hogan, but Elizabeth had been here in the canyon for months and knew her way around, even when she had to navigate by starlight.
Our horses still have the saddles on them, Matt, but I don't see yours.
That's all right. I can ride bareback if it means getting out of here. We have to stop Juan Pablo, Sam. If he gets his hands on those rifles, innocent folks will die.
I know, but I'm not sure where we'll find the place the gang plans to deliver them.
Well, I reckon if it was me, I'd head for the spot where they planned to turn him over to the Navajo the first time. That bluff where you two boys got bushwhacked to start this fandango.
Matt and Sam exchanged a glance and nodded to each other.
It's worth a try. Let's get mounted up. Elizabeth, you can take one of the saddled horses. I'll ride bareback like Matt.
You don't have to do that.
Don't worry. Remember, I'm half Cheyenne. I was riding without a saddle almost before I could walk.
He's telling the truth.
The horses inside the corral were nervous, but Sam, Stovepipe, and Wilbur were adept at handling them. They moved the brush gate aside and let out the animals they wanted, and a moment later, all five riders were mounted.
We'll have to get past the guards at the mouth of the canyon. They're not expecting trouble from in here.
The two guards Matt had knocked out must have regained consciousness.
Blast it! I should have cut their throats, or at least gagged them.
I'm glad you didn't kill them. Juan Pablo is leading them into trouble, but they're not bad people at heart.
No offense, ma'am, but I reckon they'll ventilate us if they get half a chance.
We'll have to try not to give them a chance. Let's go.